Welcome to the Rainmaker Podcast, where we elevate marketing leaders inside and out. I'm your host, Veronica Romney, master marketer, executive leader, and mentor to ambitious marketing leaders wanting to advance their careers. Each episode is filled with genuine, unscripted conversations with some of the world's top marketing experts, accomplished leaders, and industry trailblazers representing brands, both large and small. Our goal with this podcast and everything we do is to help you master your role, nurture your team, prioritize your well-being, and evolve into an industry-leading rainmaker. This is the Rainmaker Podcast.
Listen, I know I'm not supposed to have a favorite podcast episode, and it's hard to pick, you know, your favorite kid among all the episodes, but this is easily one of my most favorite episodes that I'm about to play for you. I just finished recording it with the Andrew Davis, who is one of my most favorite marketing keynote speakers of all time. When he gets on stage, I've seen him speak, I don't even know how many times, and I still remember stories and a level of performance from years ago, like the exploding watermelon. You'll hear us talk about it on the episode, one of my favorite examples, and he nailed it on stage, right? He is just such a pro. He's so kind. He's so generous. There were some serious mic drop moments in this episode, talking about how his big break from seeing himself not just as a marketing expert, but as a marketing journalist or scientist. There was another moment that I wrote down in my notes where he said, ideas are never fully baked, and how that was so important if he were to go back in his career and like rewind the tape and like cut out that ignorance tax, how much further he'd be ahead if he understood that concept. And then one of my favorite, I'll end with this before you get into the episode, he talks about selling an approach to a solution versus selling your services. And that is great advice, not just for keynoters, but for marketing service providers, marketing professionals, anybody who's in the business of selling themselves within the walls of an organization or outside the walls of an organization. Like, that was a really big moment that everybody can learn from. I have to tell you though, and I think you guys know this, I saved the last question at the end of the podcast episode for the guest to ask me. His question, I like got sweaty. It made me so, he got me in a pocket of vulnerability and asked me flat out. And I'm excited for you to hear that right at the end of the episode. So without further ado, let's make it rain with Andrew Davis. Andrew, welcome to the Rainmaker Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is so fun, Veronica.
I'm really excited about this. I saw it on my calendar like weeks and weeks ago, and I was just like slowly getting myself there. And you showed up with your bright orange glasses, which honestly, I think the first time I met you, I think you were wearing your like signature look and orange glasses. So
probably
very on brand, very on brand.
Oh, thanks. I try.
Just to like tee this up so people understand my infatuation. You, like, there's just like a certain group of humans that like one aspires to come anywhere close to being like.
Oh.
You were in that category for me easily. And you, to me, are one of the most entertaining marketing keynote speakers I have ever witnessed. I still think about the exploding watermelon. I cannot tell you. It's a thing. And it's just like a work of art, because I've seen different keynotes from you over the course of the last couple of years, and every single one of them, like, there, no two keynotes are the same. It's a different performance every single time. And so, like, I kind of, people don't know you the way that I have obsessed about this. So, like, how did you even get into this world? I mean, I know they can get to your LinkedIn, sure. They can see your background, but like, did you always know that you wanted to be a speaker?
No. I never knew I wanted to be a speaker. It was never a thing for me. I got into this because I was running an agency. I ran a company called Tipping Point Labs for a long time with a business partner named Jim Costco. And both of us were, you know, video people. We came out of television and we were doing lots of video for, you know, all sorts of brands. Yeah. And we had tried all sorts of like marketing techniques to drive business to our agency. You know, we were blogging. We had a podcast before podcasts were podcasts. I feel like, I don't know, this is like 2006 or something. We had, like, we called it a radio show. That's how old it was. And actually, we distributed it on public radio exchange, and so, like, some of our segments were on, like, national public radio, which was really, really cool. But none of it was really generating real business for us. I mean, we got interested clients, but they weren't the kinds of clients we were interested in having. So I thought, well, Oh, and we tried networking too. We, you know, joined like the AMA and all these marketing associations, and we were going to the meetups and greet ups and shake hands and cocktail hours and awards dinners and all sorts of stuff. And we were just not generating business. So I think it was Jim Costco who said, like, look, maybe we should get into content marketing. He suggested that there was this event in Miami, actually, from the Content Council. And he was like, the tickets are cheap. Like, why don't you go? He couldn't go. I don't remember why. So I flew down. I went. Basically, within like the first 15 minutes, I'm one of those people that arrives really early always. The event organizer came up because I was there so early, just sitting on a chair waiting. And she was like, hey, we have a 9:15 a.m. breakout that the person just canceled. They can't make it. I don't know who you are, but if you have anything you'd like to share, do you want to take that session?
Oh, wow.
There'll probably only be like 20 people in the room. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. So I skipped the morning keynote. I went back to my room and I just put like everything I thought I knew into a presentation. I had no idea how long it was. And I went down and for 45 minutes, I just like flew through all this stuff. But at the end of it, like six different people came up and said, like, we want to work with you. How do we? And they were great ideal clients. And I was like, wow, this is a great lead generation tool. And so I think this was 2008. So in 2008, we started using speaking as like our primary lead gen tool. And, you know, so I would just speak for free in breakout sessions, yeah, and the occasional small keynote.
Yeah.
And the whole goal was to get a bunch of business cards and then follow up with those people. And it was very successful for us.
Yeah. And then you just kind of never looked back, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, it got to the point where I was on the road so much, we started charging for the keynotes, especially the keynotes for events that we didn't think were going to be good lead gen, you know, opportunities. We'd essentially say, oh, Andrew would love to do it, but, you know, he's $2,000. And they go, oh, we thought he was free. And we'd say, sorry, you can't do it. You know, so that was essentially the kind of path to speaking. And then when I sold the agency in 2012, I needed a hobby. And my wife was like, look, why don't you, everybody's asking about your book Brandscaping and they're inviting you to come speak still. Why don't you really like focus on the speaking? So I did. And I've been doing it ever since.
Do you think, well, so I have so many questions here because like, I think there's a lot of marketing professionals that are doing decent when it comes to like the breakouts or these like micro, yeah, tactical type of sessions at these big conferences. Sure. But there's a huge leap between like nerdy talk and like keynote, opening keynote,
yeah,
entertaining level keynote. And so like, I'm curious actually how you made that transition because agency leads, you can like really flex your nerd to get those type of, yeah, clients, which is what I used to do. But when I watch you, it's a totally different experience now. Like, was it the book that catapulted?
No.
What was that?
No, I don't think the book has had any effect on my speaking career. really. You know, we quickly actually learned that the higher quality clients came from the keynote speeches.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm, like, basically, I kind of call it the audience hierarchy of needs. So like at the bottom, you have like the practitioners. Those,
right,
are the people that want the tips and tricks. Those are the ones that are going to the breakout sessions. And those people very rarely will invite you to come keynote speak because they don't really make events, right?
Correct.
You know, but then so they want the how-to content, but at the very top are the C-level executives. And sure, there are fewer C-level executives in the room at almost every event I go to. But the C-level executives, they're looking for like how to think insight. They like want you to challenge the conventional wisdom and they want to hear like a solution or a hypothesis for a new way of solving a problem that they've never heard before. And that's what really engages them. And those are the people that come up to me afterwards. And even when I was selling services as an agency or now as a keynote speaker, they come up and go, wow, that blew my mind. Like, you've totally changed the way I think. Like, you need to come to our company and speak. Or, I'm the chairman of a nonprofit and I need you to speak at our association. Or, you know, we call those the stage side leads. So, like, essentially, the big leap comes from kind of stopping the tips and tricks, the how-to, the seven ways, the nine things, you know, kinds of speeches. The supply of those kinds of speakers is really, really massive, right? Like everybody can do a how-to speech.
Yeah.
The visionary keynotes like Ron Tite or Jay Baer or, yeah, Anne Handley, Brené Brown, those people are really changing the way you think. They're transforming the way the world looks to you. And that's where you really make that leap from kind of how to, I call that expert Bill, into visionary town. And that's, I think, the big transition that, you know, you have to make.
So piggybacking off what you're sharing. So over the weekend, I was rereading re-listening to the book, The Big Leap.
Oh, yeah.
By Gay Hendricks.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. It actually was transformative for me when I went from thinking and seeing myself more in an integrator behind the scenes person to like, no, I'm one of those weirdos that wakes up at 4 a.m. with visionary thoughts. You know, like I actually am a visionary. Woo. Like, so it was a big identity shift that made me feel really uncomfortable. So, but in the book, it was like just highlighting yet again, like the differences between being in your zones and zone of genius versus proficiency and competence and stuff like that. And so like shifting from how to paradigm shifting content where people see the world differently as a result of your 30, 45, 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Did that ever happen for you? Was there an imposter syndrome? Did your internal thermometer, as Gay Hendricks talks about, like, want you to reset back to 70 degrees and how to? Like, what was that like internally for you?
You know what's funny? I actually can't remember a time after I started looking for answers to problems in a way that people hadn't solved them before. I can't think of a time that I've thought, you know, wow, I should go back or wow, I don't belong here. I think here's the real mindset shift. I don't see myself as an expert anymore. I see myself as like an investigator on a quest to find the answer to a solution. And so when I'm speaking or when I'm looking to kind of solve a problem, I'm never thinking this is the solution. I'm just thinking, you know, I have a hypothesis on how things might work. I have a new framework or a way of thinking, and I have some evidence and some stories that illustrate that this might be the right way to do it. And my challenge to you, the audience, is to decide, well, I don't know, is this a good way to go? Well, then try it. If not, I get it. Like, go back to the conventional way. We all try the conventional way is what everybody does. So there's a lot of research about that. Go for it. You don't need me to help you with that, right? So for me, it's, you know, every one of my best speeches over the last 10 years, and I come up with a new speech every year, has always come from me being annoyed about the advice other people are giving and just me believing that there's got to be a better way.
Interesting.
Like you were mentioning the curiosity factor with the exploding watermelons. Like that whole speech came out. I actually remember the moment I was like, this can't be right. I got one of the HubSpot, you know, email marketing things that said like the average YouTube video is 2 minutes and 32 seconds. And see how well I remember this? It bothered me so much. And so if your videos are, their advice was basically, if your videos are over 2 minutes and 32 seconds on YouTube, like you need to fix it and just create shorter videos. And I was like, that cannot be the best marketing advice. Like, and then I started looking into it and everybody had like an average time and like why your videos need to be shorter. And now they need to be 7 seconds. And there was and it just annoyed me. So that whole speech was like the investigation into a journey to try to figure out why people will watch long content and what's wrong with the short content. Why are people only watching 2 minutes and 32 seconds? It's not because the video needs to be shorter. It's because you don't understand what makes people really stay tuned to something. Anyway, sorry, I went on a rant. You can see how it makes me angry.
Well, first of all, I think when people are upset about an injustice of some kind, it's like the best version of ourselves. It's like when my alter ego, Beyonce, comes on the scene, I'm like, oh, she's mad. And she's slightly ghetto. So she's
like, I love it.
There, she's got some Latina coming out.
There you go.
But the identity shift from no longer seeing yourself as a marketing expert, more as like a marketing investigative journalist or scientist, where you're just testing these different hypotheses. And there's no pressure for you to have the end all be all truth with a capital T. Cause I feel like so many of us feel like if I'm not the foremost, you know, expert on shame and vulnerability, forget it. Brené Brown's all yours. Like, I'm not even going to touch that. Right. But that's not true, because all of us have unique perspectives. All of us have a different, like, again, a different hypothesis or a different injustice about something that we can speak to. So, okay, I know a lot of speakers that they'll use that keynote like, Oh, I mean, until it starts tearing, like ripping apart, like pants, like they'll wear that over and over again as long as possible. You specifically, I mean, like you're a comedian, like you have a new Netflix special every year. What's the process? Like, how does, I want to, you're like such a genius. Like, take me into your brain. Like, how does this begin? How do you start to formulate a brand new keynote per year?
Okay, so like basically I have kind of like a year long schedule, but it starts usually in the early summer. I take a lot of notes during the year of things that are bothering me or stuff I wish there was a solution to. Okay. My latest speech is about AI. So I'll tell you how, and I'm no AI expert,
right,
but I have a perspective and I had a problem I needed to solve. So last March, I went to TED in Vancouver and the whole thing was just about how amazing AI was. And, you know, I'd kind of gone into TED thinking, oh, like AI, whatever. It'll never be able to do what I can do. And then I went to TED and like the end of the first day, I was hanging out with my friends and I was so depressed. I was like, AI is amazing and it will definitely be able to do what I do, especially if it can't do it today. It'll be able to do it in 5 years.
Spanish, probably. Like, French and German.
Exactly. I was like, you know what? Like my life is over. I was pretty depressed. And so, you know, I added that to my list of like, hey, you know, how could you, you know, reduce the fear and actually embrace AI as a creative person or as a marketer or as an employee in general.
Yeah.
And so then basically the process kind of looks like this. Like in June, I kind of try to take a deep dive into like, what is the real problem? So like the AI thing, I realized there's like three components to the reason people are scared of AI. And then I kind of start thinking, oh, okay, well, what might solve these problems? And I realized it was, the real problem is we're using AI like we're using search tools. We're like trying to prompt it perfectly to get the perfect output. And that led to me experimenting with AI to build what I call a digital doppelganger, which is basically like the digital version of me. Like his name's Drew Deeney, by the way, and he can write like me and he thinks like me and he understands my opinions and perspectives. It's like, it's the most amazing thing. And he's the best creative collaborator in the world. And he's so enthusiastic. And all of a sudden I realized by the end of the summer, usually I have a really clear hypothesis. And I was so excited about AI. So from March, I'd gone to from like, my life is over, my job is done, I'm never going to speak again. Total depression to like, I'm so excited about the future. And and my best friend here, Drew Deeney, is going to make my world like so much easier and more fun and exciting. And I can be more creative and he can do some of the grunt work. And so then I usually debut the speech in September and I try to like speak at a lot of events to see if it's working. And I kind of measure the success based on stage side leads, but I treat it like an athlete. Like at the end of the day, once you have that first version of the speech, you kind of have to watch the post game footage and like fix stuff every day. So I rehearse for an hour every day. Like after I speak within the 24 hours or so, I try to watch the video of it. Like I shoot it and then I watch it and then I kind of like play by play, try to figure out what's wrong. And then I pick 5 minutes, then I fix the 5 minutes. And then when I speak again 2 weeks later, it's almost a different speech, you know? Mm-hmm. So it evolves very quickly. And essentially by the end of the year, I decide whether I'm going to dump it or double down on it. You know, either I'm getting stage side leads and lots of referrals, sometimes not even lots, but I'm getting referrals. And sometimes like I have a speech called Social Momentum that I thought it was an amazing idea. It was like 6 years ago. I poured my heart and soul in that for a year and it just never worked. Okay. So at the end of the year, I'm like, okay, dump it. Like just stop promoting this or trying it. So that's the process as kind of writ large.
But I have a question though, because like logistically, let's say, because I know it's speaking kind of like slows down, I guess, in the summer. It's not like the hottest speaking season is summer when everybody's on vacation, the attendees and stuff.
That's
so like,
true.
So summer, you're kind of like baking up some goods. You're in the kitchen cooking. And then you said you debut it in the fall, but I feel like a lot of these conferences firm up their schedules before summer. So like, how do you pull off that logistically?
This is a great question. So
sorry, I like have to know.
No, these are good. What's funny is the first gigs for a new speech are generally not like full-fledged conferences. So for example, for the AI speech, what I do, I have kind of four like groups that I reach out to at first. It's like the first ones are like, essentially former clients, you know, of mine. The second one is essentially like executives that I know. So for example, I happened to go to a cocktail party last summer And I bumped into a friend of mine who runs an agency in, actually, you might know it, in Fort Lauderdale called Zimmerman. She's a creative director there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've seen the building. If you drive down 95 in South Florida, you've seen it. So she's awesome. And I said, I'm working on this new speech. And I was like, do you guys do any lunch and learns? She's like, we don't, but we can do one. Like, we'll call it a series. I was like, fine. We booked a date. And like, I just performed what I had, you know? So that, you know, that's just the easiest and fastest way for me to start getting audience feedback. Like, do they like it? What questions do they have? What did I miss? What did they miss? You know, how can I fix this stuff? The next one is essentially associations I've been a former member of. Same kind of thing. Lunch and learns, meetups, virtual sessions. So like the summer I spend like kind of iterating small pieces of it or ideas as I kind of go along.
Yep.
And then any inquiry that comes in from essentially June to September, the very first thing I write is a session description. And a lot of those events, you're right, they're booking late and they a lot of times don't have budget for the fall gigs. So I'll just say, hey, look, I would love to speak at your event. I know you wanted me to speak about the loyalty loop and you don't have $15,000. I totally get it. No problem. I'll if you pay for my travel, I would love to speak at your event for totally no fee on my part. I just can't do the loyalty loop. I have a new speech called this AI thing. It's called Digital Doppelgangers now, but at the time it was called Artificial Influence. And I emailed the session description. And if they take me on it, up on it, well, there you go. I've got a gig.
And you got a gig.
Yeah. It's kind of like a mishmash of strategies that helps me get that velocity.
I mean, you don't look like Dave Chappelle, but you remind me of Dave Chappelle. Like, or at least the comedian, the comics route of just
it is
grungy in the hole, nasty clubs, working out joke by joke before you ever see it on Netflix, you know, in a package deal like that. And I remember when I was talking to Ron Tite, I think we went to like breakfast or something once, he talks about how like every time he performs, even if it's the same like tried and true keynote that everyone loves and he has memorized to the nth degree, it's like I always challenge myself to do the new two. So like there's always an additional 2 or 5 minutes of content that I've never, so that's like good. He does it like iteratively like that. And I was like, damn, that's so smart. So smart.
I mean, he's a master of comedy and speaking and yeah, he's got it down. But you know, it's funny that you say it's like a comedy approach because I, for a while when I was living in Boston, I did some stand-up comedy and I was not very good, by the way, but there was a guy also coming to the open mic nights who was really good. And this is just a quick story about how amazing this kind of approach can be, but his name's Josh Gondelman. And he was just like me, showing up at every open mic night, you know, 3 times a week or whatever. And I started to become friendly with him. And then one of the open mics, it was at Sally O'Brien's, this little dive bar in Boston. Their MC was going to leave. So the MC asked, like, does anyone want to MC this? And everybody's like, man, what a lame job. Like, you got to be there from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. It's like terrible comedy all night. And Josh, like, raised his hand immediately. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you want to host this thing? This is so lame. And he immediately looked at me and was like, you know what? If I can get on stage every 7 minutes and do 2 minutes of stuff and just keep refining stuff all night, like I'll get a total of like 60 minutes on stage every night in front of an audience.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that's amazing. So Josh Gondelman, like after that, I did see him for a few more years, actually. But after that, he moved to New York. He quit his job as a school teacher. He was a finalist on the stand-up comedy like reality show. He wrote a best-selling book. He's doing stand-up comedy like in some of the biggest clubs and touring around the world. And you know, it's all a testament to like his work ethic in just getting better. And the same applies, you know, I think with speaking, but also with the ideas behind the speaking. So one of the key things that maybe gets lost is I'm not just trying to focus on the performance. I'm really trying to fix the idea and how it's expressed because I've learned so much from the questions I get, you know, like I had a great conversation with a woman in Delaware 2 weeks ago and she was like, you know, I can't get over the fact that when I use AI, I feel like I'm cheating. I feel like it's unethical.
Oh, wow.
And that just made me really think. And so I came back the next day, I worked on a whole new little idea I have about like, why AI makes us uneasy, but why we're still in wonder of it and like why we're fearful it'll take our job and like how can we reconcile that so that I really truly understand the audience, but I can maybe help solve the problem with a new way of thinking.
Okay, it's very generous of you and very thoughtful of you to like feel the pain of this one human being and like take it upon yourself as a moral responsibility to like help, which I thought was really, that's really cool. So let me give you a compliment.
Hey Rainmakers, it's Veronica, and we'll get back to today's episode. But before that, I have an exciting invitation for all of you aspiring, ambitious marketing leaders. If you are serious about advancing your career in marketing and you're looking for an expert to give you some personal insights, guidance, tips, then I'm going to invite you to schedule a free pathway to promotion call with me. This is a special one-on-one call with just you and me to discuss your current roadblocks in your career, your long-term aspirations and ambition, and the next best step for you and your personal promotion. Head to pathwaycall.com or click the link in my show notes to schedule your free pathway to promotion call. Now back to today's episode.
I'm curious, what does a team around you and this business model look like?
Sure.
Like, I mean, who shows up to support you so that you are fully protected to be your queen bee, to go lay those eggs on that stage every time? Do you know what I mean? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. That's a very good Mike Michalowicz reference there. Well, okay, so speaking is a very lonely business, and you're right. Like, I came from a very team-oriented environment. Like, I had a team of employees. I worked with a lot of people every day. We had a really good office and really cool culture. And then when I sold the agency, I went to just, like, me, right? Yeah. And, yeah, I can be very lonely. And so my team essentially consists of, you know, like, I have Elizabeth, who's my wife, but she's also my kind of logistics person, does all the billing. I have a person that helps me with sales. So I have a kind of salesperson that's commission based. So we collaborate a lot. But then those are like the employee team.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I have a really close network of really great speaker friends that better than Elizabeth or better than Ryan, like, truly understand what it's like to struggle with an idea or bomb on stage or have an event organizer who's frustrated with the way you work, or, you know, like, there's a lot of things that I don't think it's easy for other people to understand. So, like, Ann Hanley, I have a call with every week, every Monday. And we don't just talk about speaking, but it's a big part of what we talk about. We work on our speeches together. She watches my speeches and gives me feedback, and vice versa. We brainstorm ideas. Sometimes on a Sunday when we're stressed out about a Monday presentation, we'll just call for moral support. Jay Baer, who I know you know and is coming on the show, he's awesome. He's always been a great support. Marcus Sheridan, Ron Tite is on that list, although I don't call him very often. But when I do, he's always very supportive. It's usually and I'm usually calling Ron for, like, comedic help, like a joke that I feel like should work, but I can't figure it out. So Tamsin Webster. So, you know, like, I have a really small group of really good, intimate speaking buddies, I call them, that have transformed my career. And they've also brought me business, and I've brought them business. You know, if I can't do an event, and they're like, we want something about customer service, I'm like, oh, you got to have Jay Baer if you can't get me. Like, he's awesome, you know, and vice versa. So that's essentially, I would say, my team. In addition to that, I have, like, Michael Port, who runs Heroic Public Speaking. He and his wife are fantastic. But Michael and I work very closely together on almost every speech. Once it shows promise, he kind of, like, acts as a director. He's, you know, he can sit and just say, look, like, I think that's not working, or it could be better. And he really pushes me on the performance side. So that's, and the content side, by the way, like, he's very good at asking those questions. So it is a team of people. You know, I certainly couldn't do it alone.
Yeah.
I have a video editor. Like, it's a long list. Like
No. And what I've learned about the speaker world is that, like, you guys, it's a very lonely road. It is the road warrior life. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's hard. It's harder for different people at different stages. Like, Ron has two littles right now, or different things like that. But what I have found is that you guys really are there for each other, like, deeply, in high proximity.
Deeply.
And it's a very generous community of wickedly kind human beings that are accustomed to failing on a regular basis. So, like, there's always a dose of humility issued.
That's so true.
And you guys take it. And it's just like, wow. Like, you can't really get into that speaker life if you don't have the stamina to handle, like, no one laughed at that joke. And survey, the speaker feedback wasn't that great. Like, it's just, it can be brutal sometimes. But you're right. It is very, very generous.
It can be brutal.
If you could do it all over again,
what
would you have done differently to either negate the ignorance tax or expedite other learning curves? Like,
Oh yeah.
You're years out now, but like going back to the marketing professional that might be listening to this podcast, or the executive
yeah.
dreams about leaving the job and like being a marketing entrepreneur, which would include like personal branding efforts, like book writing and speaking.
Sure.
What would you advise that aspirational human?
Okay. The first thing I would do is I would aerate a lot of my big ideas earlier.
Okay.
So when we talk about the leap from kind of expert to visionary,
yeah.
I think I had some of these ideas, but I was nervous about sharing them. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm sure everybody's thought about this. Like, why should I even bother? Or maybe they've already solved this problem trying with my solution and it didn't work and I just can't find the evidence. And so maybe, and I just kind of gave up, or I didn't want to share it even internally with team members. So I think visionary thinking comes from your willingness to share those visionary ideas as soon as and as often as you can. But with the and this is the caveat, and maybe the second lesson, with an eye and an ear for the feedback from the audience to make the solution better.
Yeah.
So like for me, the idea is never fully baked. And I wish I had learned that earlier too. You know, one of the reasons I didn't share the ideas is like, I need to keep working on it until it's a really good like conceptual framework. And I got to write about it. And like, I want to have a presentation to show, you know, but I think the best thinking happens when you're willing to just call up a friend and send them a text picture of, you know, like a framework you drew on an index card and see what, and then talk them through it and see what they think. You know, is there a hole? Is there something missing? You'll learn so much, not just about sharing ideas, but about yourself and the way you think, the more conversations you have. And then I think the third thing that if I had to do this all over again, really boils down to truly understanding what thought leadership is. Yeah. Like even when I was running an agency, you know, my gut said, and every marketer said, we need to write how-to advice and we need to be experts. And I think at the end of the day, you know, we like one of the things I spent a lot of time doing was like marketing and branding myself, but not the ideas.
Mm.
And, you know, our agency transformed when we started to sell our ideas, not the service. So when we could get a C-level executive, CMO, to buy into our approach, the rest just worked. They were willing to pay more. They were willing to spend more time with us. They were more intrigued by our thinking. And so at the end of the day, I spent, and by the way, with the speaking, I spent a huge amount of time trying to market myself and be on every social platform and create so much content with the idea that that would help me book speeches. But at the end of the day, it's turned out that they buy the idea first, you know, and then they buy me last because I'm just not famous. You know, I'm not Brené Brown or Simon Sinek. So
you're famous to some of us, trust me.
Oh, well, that's so kind. I mean, I'm more famous than some people, but I'm certainly like, I can go to a shopping mall and like no one asks for my autograph, right? That's the kind of fame where they just buy you. They don't even care what you're thinking.
It's 100% or talking about.
Yeah, so that's funny. Yeah, so I think those three things, like be willing to share your visionary ideas, be humble enough to kind of refine the idea and share it often. And then the third one is really focus on marketing the ideas just as much, if not more, than the service you or product you offer.
Gosh, I'm not trying to be meta with myself at this moment, but you have some like just mic drops, like ideas are not fully baked when you can get a person to buy into an approach versus a tangible service.
Yeah.
Like it's, I watched Oppenheimer several months ago.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, it's, I think that's a good example of like,
yeah,
they
sure.
bought into his vision, not knowing the end result from the, like you couldn't, there's no possible way they were doing.
There's no possible way. Right.
But they bought into this man's unique approach to how he would potentially solve this problem. And I'm like, damn, that's so smart. Okay. So we do this thing on the podcast. I've asked you a bazillion questions that you didn't know I was going to ask because it's just, you know, selfishly I get to ask whatever I want. So I would love for you to ask me whatever you want for the final question before we wrap up.
Okay. So I have two questions.
Oh,
the first question, is an easy one. I know you read and consume a lot of content. So, and I'm always looking for a good book to read.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what book you like, maybe you've read in the last few years that's kind of changed your perspective or shifted your worldview that you wish others would read.
I love reading, and I believe that leaders are readers. So I'm a nerd. I was an IB student in Atlantic High School in Delray Beach, Florida, which you know.
Yay.
Like I'm that like baccalaureate background. So I'm a nerd. Honestly, some of the books that have been so paradigm shifting for me as of late aren't even like business books like they have been in the past. Cause you and I could just go off on that, right?
Yeah,
For example, one of the books I'm reading right now that I'm actually even has inspired me in some of the executive coaching that I do, because I coach marketing executives and in their either their internal reputation issues or their exterior outward personal brand issues, is a book called It's Not You.
Okay.
It's about narcissism.
Oh, wow.
But the what's cool about this book is that, number one, most literature or writing around narcissism is the study of why people are narcissistic. This book is a little bit different of a lens, in the sense of like not so much the focus on the narcissist, which is the hunter. It's more the focus on the lion that's being hunted.
Wow.
So the recipient of those type of behaviors and personality traits. And you will find them no matter where you go. And the more that you advance in your career, the more narcissistic human beings that you will encounter. Why? Because they're wildly successful.
Oh, that's interesting.
So what I share, what I've had to make choices in my personal life with family and such, and I've had to advise my clientele that, like, you have two choices with personalities like this. You either, one, decide to mourn the loss of the relationship or leave the job, you take it as an opportunity to skill up so that you can actually work with somebody like that, because you'll, the more you advance, the more you will encounter, and you will never not avoid it.
Wow. That's really cool. Well, I'm going to read it. That's just fascinating.
It's a good one.
Okay. Now I have a speaking question for you.
Okay. But I'm okay. Now I'm nervous.
I know you've spoken before and spoken a lot, and I know you kind of have visions of speaking more.
I do.
So what's the one thing you think's kind of holding you back, besides the littles and being at home? Like, forget about that, but just on the speaking side.
Yeah. This is why I was asking you so many life probing questions. Because yes, so I have two boys, and now they're 7 and 10. And so I feel like I'm not abandoning them. To be fair. And I have support at home, and my husband's extremely, so like the home life is secure, stable, safe for mommy to go and not like be at a deficit of my family. Right. And I am. I'm that visionary that wakes up at 4 a.m. and I have different ideas and different things like that.
Yeah.
This is a hard one for me. Of all the pursuits that I've done, being an agency owner, being a consultant, being that, like all the titles that I have possessed or things that I've done, I don't see myself still really as like a keynoter.
Wow.
I know. I still have work to do even on that. I want to. I want to so badly. Yeah. So I hang around people that like by osmosis, maybe if I hang around and run tight, it will just like come, you know?
That's right.
And of course, Michael and Amy Port, like one of my favorite quotes from Michael Port, to give credit where credit is due. He said one time, I'll never forget. He's like, you don't have to say anything different to make a difference.
Mm.
And I was like, damn it. That's so good. Because I think maybe because I get paid more times than not by being the expert.
Yeah.
I have not made the identity shift, which is what you prescribed earlier, of like, I don't have to be an expert for everything that comes out of my mouth. I can just be me, and where I have an injustice or I'm passionate, it's worthy of being conversed about. And I just, I'm in the in-between. I'm in the doggy door. I can feel it.
Okay, good. Well, I will pledge that if you're struggling with that doggy door transition, you got to call me, because I think you're fantastic, and I've seen you speak, and I think you're great. You've got great charisma. You obviously know your stuff, and I think you can make that leap if anyone can. So reach out. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I already text you, so I appreciate that.
Awesome.
Okay, well, I could talk to you forever and ever, and I know that we're friends, and I'm going to text you more. So with that, okay, I just want to say thank you for being on the podcast. Of course,
thank you.
We will link all of your incredible books. If anybody ever wants a world, you know, stage-breaking keynote speaker, it's you, it's you. So
thank you,
my friend, for being on today's Rainmaker podcast.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on today's Rainmaker podcast. Marketers help other marketers. So if there's a marketer in your life who could really use a new perspective in a way that helps them advance their career, please pass this episode forward. Share, like, leave us a review. Everything helps as we embark on helping as many marketers elevate themselves inside and out. You can always visit veronicarami.com for today's show notes, additional links to some free resources and tools for you to help you advance your career. You can always connect with us on social media at @VRami if you want more behind the scenes or a way for us to connect personally. Until next time, my friends, make it rain.